You are an energetic being first and foremost, so the quality of your energy field is really important. It works like a filter, each part of the field enabling or preventing whatever is turning up in your life. This is the Future Self Energetics Show. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and I work in the body, mind and spirits community. I'm an award-winning master energist. That's a therapist that specializes in improving the quality of the energy fields that move in, through and around your body. If you want anything in your life to change, you have to begin with changing your energy field first. So my shows are a mixture of talk and therapy ideas, interviews and thought-provoking inspiration. They're all about energy, energy fields, protection and connection. If there's a topic you'd love me to cover in my show, please email me, amanda@futureselfenergetics.com. And if you love the show here on UK Health Radio, please spread the word about it in your networks. I think sometimes the universe has a really wry sense of humour. So what do I mean? Well, there I was at the end of last year, having just said to a really good friend of mine that in my own opinion, I'm a master energist and that's the best way that I work. And what happens in the first week of my 2026 experiment? Well, I find myself being pulled straight back into channeling, mediumship, divination work, which is where my roots were. And I've been pulled into it with such a force that I simply couldn't ignore it. I felt as soon as I was starting to align more with some of these older types of working that I used to do, that it would be really fun, it would be an interesting part of the experience just to go along with the flow and see what happened. And within days, I'd ended up channeling my own oracle deck system. And the reason that's so unusual, I'm sure will become apparent as you listen to my show today. So it wasn't just one oracle deck, it was multiple decks actually, and each one explored different forms of consciousness and the different states and included different guides and helpers and mentors and signatures and vibrations and frequencies and energies and laws and a whole host of different things. And I started to really laugh at myself because clearly someone up there was saying to me, Amanda, stop pretending you're not exactly who you are. The interesting things for me with this, though, is that although I know I'm pretty good at most forms of divination, I haven't done much, if anything. I've got very, very little experience with reading cards. I didn't have any idea how they worked when I created an oracle deck. I didn't know what the layouts were going to be or anything like that, which is fairly crazy if you think about it. It's absolutely crazy to set out and end up creating a set of oracle cards and have, well, no idea apart from intuition and guidance that what I was doing was the right thing to do. I'm an energetic mechanic. I'm a master energist. I love patterns. I love vibrations. And so to create an oracle card deck, or rather a number of them, well, that both is and isn't really what I do. This is the Future Self Energetics Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson. And on the show this week, we're diving into something that I'm discovering as I go along. So I thought I would take you along with me. I've decided I'm going to create my own oracle deck as part of my 2026 experiment because that's what the experiment wants me to do. And actually, I didn't make any choice about it. Let's be real. It was decided for me. So if you know what I mean. And so whilst I'm a natural medium and a channel and, you know, I'm someone who's never needed to formally learn these types of divination skills, I realise I actually know very little about the formal practice of working with divination cards, despite knowing a lot about divination generally. So I did what any sensible person in the UK would do when they were in my situation. I went to Glastonbury to find out more. Now, if you're going to learn anything about tarot or oracle, I think Glastonbury is going to be a great place to start. The place is absolutely filled, just in case you've never been there, with shops selling all sorts of card decks and crystals and books and all manner of divination tools and spiritual modalities are there of all kinds. And I was guided straight from the central car park, it's like being pulled along magnetically, to a shop in the high street that's called Tarot Plus. And there I met this incredibly helpful lady called Liz, who spent her entire lifetime, it seems, working with divination cards. And I was so grateful of all the people that I would meet. The first person I met when I arrived in Glastonbury, the first person who answered my questions was her. And I'm incredibly indebted. So we got talking, we did hit it off. And I explained pretty much that what I wanted to do was to learn to read the cards, because that's true. I told her I was a good channel and a good medium, very experienced in both, and I could read crystal balls and such. But I didn't actually know that much about how tarot and oracle decks worked in practice. What makes them different from each other, for example, or even how to properly read the cards for myself or other people if I ever decided to do that. And by the end of our conversation, which was probably about half an hour, I finally bought a few decks of cards from her. I know I asked far too many questions, I'm sure, but I left with my head full of great information and a paper carrier bag with three decks to try out at home. What struck me most during our conversation, the conversation I had with Liz, was something she said about why different people work with cards in different ways. She explained that some practitioners absolutely need the cards as their primary tool for accessing energetic information. They've trained themselves to read the symbolism on the cards and to learn the meanings and to interpret the relationship of the imagery, to allow the cards to speak to them through the card spreads in very specific ways. Others, and that's me included, I think, not that I said it at the time, we access the same information directly through channeling and mediumship, but we might still find cards useful as a focusing device or as a way to help the clients understand what's actually being communicated. I mean, there is no better or worse way. They're simply different pathways to the same destination. I found it really reassuring to hear her say this, because I've always been able to work with energies directly. I don't actually need divination tools to access information or to understand what's happening in someone's energy field. But I do know plenty of people who rely on their cards completely, and their readings are absolutely brilliant. It's not about one method being superior or right and another one being wrong. It's about finding what works for your particular gifts and the way you're wired energetically. I think this realization gave me a lot more permission to approach creating my own oracle deck in some ways. I'm not following traditional tarot structure, I know that from talking to Liz. I'm not trying to get the cards to be anything except what the cards want to be. It's a bit free form. I haven't studied the established systems that other deck creators might use. All I've done is simply channeled what wants to come through and trusted that because I don't know any better, I might accidentally create something quite interesting. Sometimes not knowing the rules means that you don't limit yourself by them. I also am very aware, though, that sometimes not knowing the rules can leave you looking something of a fool in front of people. So I was really grateful to Liz, because although she didn't know I was creating a deck yet, and if she hears this show today, hi Liz, she might be surprised that I'm even attempting to do so, because as I said to her, I've got no experience of cards whatsoever. I really don't know what I'm doing. But I think because I'm channeling these from my own future self, that's where I feel they're coming from. All I have to do is what I'm told, really. Isn't it ever thus? And I also came away from the shop knowing that I really would need to do at least some more research to understand more than just the basics. because I feel that I need to do that to honour the energy of the cards. If I'm going to create a deck that other people might ever use, not that that's necessarily why I'm doing it, but if I am going to create a card, a deck of cards that other people may use at some stage, I ought to know something about their expectations, what distinguishes, for example, oracles from tarot, the different spread types it needs to work in, and what makes the difference between a reading that's exceptional, which of course is something that I would favour, and another that is average. So this week has been quite the education. I've been reading and researching and experimenting with the decks I bought and discovering all sorts of fascinating things that I really didn't know before. And this seems to be part of my 2026 experiment. So what I want to share with you today is this week's experience from that experiment. And I'm going to take you through what I've learnt about the differences between tarot and oracle cards. And if you really already know all these differences, please forgive me, I am a beginner after all. And also what I'm discovering about reading cards as I partially fumble my way through this process as an enthusiastic beginner who happens to have some really, really strong channeling abilities. And that's really what this 2026 experiment's all about, isn't it? Creating those spaces for elevation on my calendar for pure potentiality to show up in this year, and then being willing to just follow the breadcrumb trail wherever the universe leads me, even if that means admitting that I don't actually know what I'm doing and I need to learn as I go a bit, especially as it happens, embracing parts of my identity I'd somehow, I don't know, convinced myself that wasn't really central to who I am. It turns out it really, really is. Well, that's another joke on me. Thank you very much, universe. So Liz, the lady in Glastonbury in the shop, she said something else that really stayed with me. She told me that every deck creator brings their own unique perspective and energy to their cards. And the best decks are the ones where that authenticity is allowed to shine through completely. She said, people can always tell when a deck's been created by someone who's trying to copy what already exists or trying to trot something out just a bit to make a bit of money. They really tell the difference between that kind of entrepreneur and someone who's directly channeling something genuinely new or something genuinely needed. And she looked at me very directly as she said this, which was slightly unnerving. But really what I heard in my heart, what I heard her say, even though these weren't the words that she used, was, don't worry so much about not knowing the traditional rules. Your cards will be what they need to be because you are infusing them with you. So that's a message for my guides and angels, perhaps, if ever there was one. So here we are. I'm going to share what I'm learning about tarot and oracle cards this week, knowing full well that next week I might discover something completely different during my 2026 experiment. This is my journey of discovery, and I'm inviting you to come along with me on my shows as I sort through whatever it is I'm finding out, and then share whatever seems to be useful or interesting or surprising along the way. So I'm so glad you're here with me.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, Whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Future Self Energetic Show. I'm Amanda Nelson, and we're exploring what I'm learning about divination cards as part of my 2026 experiment, which it seems is including the creation of my own oracle deck. If you'd asked me that at Christmas, I would have said, there's no way I'll be doing that. But here we are. So let me start with the most basic question I had when I began looking into this more. What actually is the difference between tarot cards and oracle cards? And it turns out there are some quite distinct differences between the two systems. So tarot decks have a very specific structure. They contain 78 cards, which and they always have those 78 cards, and they are considered to be quite a sophisticated deck because there are so many cards to learn. 78 cards, and that's a lot. And the cards are divided into two main groups, the major arcana and the minor arcana. The major arcana, they've got 22 cards, and these represent those significant life themes and archetypal energies. You've probably heard of some of them, even if you've never touched a tarot deck. So the Fool, the Magician, the Tower, the Chariot, the Star, the Empress. These cards speak to the big transformative moments and the universal human experiences that we all encounter. And the minor arcana, that makes up the remaining 56 cards. These are divided into four suits. Traditionally, you'll see illustrations on the cards for the cups, the wands, the swords, and the pentacles. And though different decks might use slightly different names for their suits, each suit really has the same 14 cards. There are 10 numbered cards from ace to 10, plus 4 court cards. So the court cards would be page, knight, queen, and king. The minor arcana, I think, from what I can see, tends to speak to the everyday sorts of experiences, those smaller details of life, the day-to-day challenges and opportunities that we all navigate. Tarot has been around for centuries, and you can tell that with some of the designs on the cards. And interestingly enough, too, the structure has remained almost entirely constant, consistent throughout. People haven't changed the structure of the cards. Different decks might have wildly different artwork or slightly different interpretations culturally, but the underlying architecture of 78 cards in this particular arrangement stays the same. And there's something quite dependable about that consistency. It means that someone who learns to read tarot using one deck could probably work pretty well with any other tarot deck, because the fundamental system is recognizable and remains constant for them. I also think what's interesting about tarot, and I mentioned this to Liz, is that if you think over the centuries, how many people have used tarot cards, have read with those cards, then with tarot, you also have that almost ancestral bone energy, that sort of passed down between the generation knowledge. And of course, as we all know, when we sit with a a pack of cards, say a tarot card deck that has been used in the same way for centuries and centuries, then as we introduce that energy into us, we also bring with it all of the history that goes along with it as well. Now, oracle decks, I think, are quite different. I mean, they're wonderfully rebellious by comparison. There are no rules at all about how many cards should be in the deck. Some have 20, some have 45, some have 72. And the creator is the one who decides entirely. There's no structure, particularly no suit that must be included, no specific theme that have to be represented or covered. And oracle decks are completely personal expressions of whoever creates them. It makes sense to me that I must therefore be creating an oracle deck, as my process of creation fits here very neatly. And when I originally went into the shop in Glastonbury, part of it was to find out, am I actually creating a tarot deck here, or am I creating an oracle system? And it's rather liberating when you think about creating your own oracle deck, as I am, because I don't need to fit my channeled downloads into a predetermined framework or box. The container I'm using has no sides. So if I end up with 63 cards in my elemental deck and 48 in another deck exploring something entirely different, like your manifestation energies, even though that's a huge amount of cards, it's still perfectly acceptable. Oracle decks give you complete freedom to follow wherever the channeling leads you without worrying about whether or not you're breaking an established system or the rules that go with it. Liz in Glastonbury, she explained that this difference in structure also affects how people use the decks. So tarot readers often use very complex spreads with multiple cards in specific positions, and the interaction between those positions and the cards that land in them creates layers of meaning. The Celtic cross spread, for instance, which I don't know much about, but I'm going to be looking into, that uses 10 cards in positions that represent things like your present situation, or influences that are cutting across things, or something that's a foundation, or something that's happened to you in your recent past. And so the same card can mean something subtly quite different depending on where it lands in the spread. Oracle card spreads do seem to be simpler, but I'm happy to be corrected with that. Often I've seen oracle cards plucked from a deck. You might have a single card, it might be groups of three, because there's no standardized structure to them as far as I can tell. And oracle readers rely much more heavily on their intuition, and then if they need to, they can reference additional guidance provided in the booklet that usually accompanies the deck when you acquire it. I don't know yet if the oracle card meanings are straightforward or obvious, you know, whether or not they are or are not more or less obvious than tarot, because there are clues in the cards, of course. But oracle cards tend to have a meaning written on the cards, and certainly tarot don't do that. And so oracle cards seem less dependent on the levels of freeform symbolic interpretation, or that's the way it seems to my untrained eye. It seems to me that freeform symbolic interpretation is down to the creator, and then the person that uses that card can either choose to take that symbolic interpretation or not when they're working with the card. That wouldn't be the way it works with tarot. Tarot seems to work a little bit differently, but again, as I said, I'm happy to be corrected. After all, I've only really been into this for about 2 weeks, so I'm not an expert with this, even if I am with other things. I actually was a bit cheeky and I asked Liz which system she preferred. And she smiled, lovely smile, and she said that she does use both, depending on what's needed, but she has a lifelong relationship with tarot. And that told me a lot about her and her commitment to the cards, but also about how much faith that she must have in her relationship with those cards. She uses tarot a lot for deep dive, more detailed exploration of a complex situation where there's lots of nuance and layers. Oracle might work better when perhaps she's just reading something that needs clear, direct guidance or a quick answer to a specific question. I've seen that sometimes people online, actually, because I did, as part of my research, watch what people were doing online. They use both tarot and oracle cards from different decks in the same reading. So they almost mix their materials. And they usually start with tarot to map out the broader landscape. And then they start pulling in oracle cards for clarification or additional guidance. So I found that really fascinating. What I'm discovering as I work with the decks I bought is that my natural inclination leans towards the oracle style, even though tarot interests me profoundly. The cards I'm channeling, they want to speak directly and clearly. They have specific messages and teachings, and I don't feel they particularly need to be part of a more complex system to deliver those messages effectively at all. In one of my decks, the elemental decks, my gnomes want to tell you about natural rhythms and respecting the earth, and my salamanders want to discuss intensity and choosing where you thrive. And my fairies, well, they just want to be honest about their wild nature. But these aren't two-layered messages really requiring complex spreads to interpret. They're very clear communications from consciousness states that are things that they want you to know. And I'm also discovering that because I channel very naturally, I suspect I don't actually read the cards the way traditional readers might do. So if you put cards in front of me, I would probably glance at the cards and study the images and then just give a completely different reading. So when I sit with a deck, I'm not memorising what each card means according to a booklet, for example, or what the creator themselves intended. I'm just allowing the energy of the card to speak to me directly through the ethers, and what comes through might be quite different from the traditional interpretation entirely. This is apparently perfectly acceptable in oracle work, thank goodness, though it would be more challenging, I think, with tarot, where centuries of established meaning are built into the same system, even though it's interpreted differently, according to who is reading the cards and the position of the cards. I think what I did find, though, was when I got my decks home, rather than open the boxes and dive straight into the booklet to learn about the traditional spread or layout and learn the meaning of any of the cards, I didn't do that. I just sat with each card one by one, individually, connecting with the imagery, looking at the detail, introducing myself properly to the card and allowing the card to introduce itself to me. Now, I don't know if that's what I should be doing or not, but that's certainly what I did. And I would actually recommend that to anybody so that before they dive into the cards and start shuffling the cards and expect the cards to connect with them, just spend time really connecting. It's like gazing into another person's eyes. So the research then that I've been doing this week, what has it shown me? It's shown me that there are readers who work purely from the traditional meanings. There are, and they memorise every card and its traditional interpretations and positions. There are readers who use the cards as a jumping off point, but rely primarily on their intuition or psychic abilities. And there are readers who blend both approaches, using their knowledge of traditional meanings whilst remaining open to additional intuitive information that may be downloaded through the reading time. I mean, there is another method, and of course, being an outlier, this is the one that I use, and I think this is likely to be me. I don't know if it will be you. And that is that I have cards and crystal balls and such, because actually, if I wanted to, well, it's just easier for a client to think that I'm giving them the depth of message that I am, and that it's coming through card or rune or crystal ball. I mean, I can read and divine through many, many methods, but to not have that has a tendency to freak some people out. So I don't want to do that. I know this because when I am offered crystal ball readings. I've written a book on how to connect with crystal balls. When I offered crystal ball readings, it was acceptable for a client for me to be able to do a deep dive into the energies, but they found it really disconcerting when that same person realized their messages had very little to do with what was coming through the crystal ball at all. So I don't want to be in any way disingenuous, which is why I've actually given the fourth. It's quite likely, though, with the cards, I think I will work with the cards quite differently. I think I'll be a co-conspirator with them, if you like. What I'm learning about, actually, is that there are lots and lots of layers to how you work with these cards and lots of layers to how you interpret what's on the cards. The surface layer, then, that's the most obvious meaning of the card. It's the words that's written on the card, the picture that's drawn. And if you draw a card about new beginnings, there's bound to be something beginning in their life. But beneath the surface layer are those deeper questions, aren't they? What kind of beginning? What needs to end to make space for this beginning? What resources, what assistance might you need to support this beginning? Are you ready and willing for this beginning, or are you resisting it? Good card reading, I think, moves past the obvious meaning on the card, and it moves into those deeper layers. That's the difference between an exceptional reading and a good reading. I think this is where the reader's skill and intuition must become really important. These are just my beliefs. You might feel something entirely different. I think two different readers, though, might pull the same card from the same person and offer completely different insights. Both will be valid because they're tuning into different layers of meaning that are all simultaneously present in the card. And the way they work and their relationship with those cards is going to have an influence on that. And I'm also learning that timing matters in divination. Cards can speak to what's happening right now, what's likely to be unfolding if the current patterns continue the way they are, or what potential exists that hasn't yet become activated. I get all of this. Yes, this is what my cards are about too. This is why readings aren't set in stone predictions of the future. They're maps, and they're maps of current energetic patterns and probable trajectories if nothing changes. But you can, as we all know, using our personal choice, we can choose to change. Anything can change. Free will always remains active. So the cards show you where you're headed based on your current frequency and trajectory, but you can shift that frequency and trajectory and thus shift and change the outcome. I think this has a lot of implications for how we use divination tools generally. They're not fortune-telling devices, or at least from my point of view, they're not. These are mechanisms that lock us into futures, but they're not necessarily predetermined ones. They're almost feedback mechanisms showing us, okay, this is where you are at the moment in your current energetic state. What's the state that you wish to achieve? And what, if you stay on the right, on the same pathway, what that state's likely to then create for you instead? I can learn what a card traditionally means, of course, but when I'm working with it, I think I'm primarily listening to what the card itself wants to communicate in that specific moment for that specific person, or what's coming up on an entirely separate vibration altogether.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the Future Self Energetic Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Amanda Nelson, and we've been exploring what I'm learning as a beginner about tarot and oracle cards as I create my own deck. I'm a beginner, and yet I'm channeling my own deck as part of my 2026 experiment. But I don't know, how do tarot cards and oracle cards even work? So one of the most interesting things I've discovered this week is how divination cards actually work, and they work very similarly to other divination that I'm already pretty accomplished at. Not the mechanics of shuffling cards and drawing cards and laying them on a table. What's genuinely happening energetically is identical. So when you sit down with a deck of cards or a crystal ball or runes or anything else and you ask that question, it's a similar kind of thing that's taking place. So Liz had a wonderful way of explaining this. She said that at any given moment, you're holding a particular question or concern in your energy field. And that question creates a specific vibrational frequency, rather like tuning into a radio and finding a particular radio station. And when you're shuffling the cards while holding that question, your energy field interacts with the cards because they're all energetic. The cards that end up in your reading aren't at all random. They are the cards that resonate with the frequency that you're broadcasting. And I thought, yes, of course, you attract the cards that connect with you, that have that kind of entrainment, that coherence. I understood this already, of course. So it's not magic in the sense of supernatural forces moving cards around. These are energies. This is how energy loves to work. It's very, very elegant. Your hands, guided by the subtle movements of your own energy field, select or cut or have leap out, as can happen. Cards leap out of the decks. The cards that match what you're asking about. So the vibration that you are putting into the deck responds with the energy that corresponds to that question. So I suppose it's a kind of synchronicity. Others call it energetic resonance. For it could also be a call and a response energetic style. But whatever you call it, something genuine happens here beyond mere chance. And I think it affects the cards. And I think that's why the cards are able to bring you the answer. And the other thing about establishing a relationship with your own cards is that your cards start to identify when it's your energy or when the question you're asking is the energy that belongs to another energetic being. And that also makes a lot of sense to me. So your card can't initially differentiate whether it's your energy or somebody else's. And so it's possible that you'll be pulling cards and the cards are intended for you and not the person you're doing the reading for. So get to know your cards. Don't share your cards. Allow your cards to get to know your energetic signature and it will work much better. I mean, I tested all of these things on myself this week. I pulled cards from the decks whilst asking specific questions, and then I pulled cards whilst asking fluffier questions. And I pulled cards from the deck before I'd made a connection with them, and I also pulled cards from the decks after I had made a connection with them, and the difference I think was remarkable. And of course that makes sense, doesn't it? Of course it would. When I held a clear question, the card that appeared were consistently relevant and they provided useful insight. And when I wasn't focused or I was distracted or I was using a card that didn't know me well enough yet, the cards, well, they felt a bit disconnected, a bit random, not quite on point. So this also told me something really important about how to work with divination tools generally. And it seems like the cards work in the same way as other forms of divination tools do. You know, the cards are simply a different pathway to connect into the same energy grids that I work in every day. If I had a crystal ball, one of the first things I'll be teaching to you, if you just got one, I'd be saying, okay, then you've got to spend time. You've got to get to know each other. Get to know the personality of your crystal ball. Don't ask it to do anything for you yet. Just the two of you get to know one another. And it must clearly be the same with the cards. And I think also the quality of the question you ask, that you pose, that matters enormously as well. So if you ask a vague question, you're going to get a vague answer. You know, as an example, what should I do? It's too broad. But if you were to say something like, which guidance do I most need to work with regarding my career decision? If it's really specific enough, the cards can respond with useful guidance. I'm learning to frame questions in ways that invite clear communication from cards rather than those muddy generalizations. I don't ever intend to do card readings. Well, never say never. Now I've said it. OK, but I know how to do this already, because if you've ever used a pendulum or you do muscle testing like with kinesiology, or well, you soon learned how to frame a question that's explicit enough to receive a relevant, unambiguous answer back. And I'm also discovering that different decks have different personalities and specialities. Some decks are gentle and nurturing, and they're very comforting and encouraging, and others are playful. Others are sort of direct and in your face, a little bit challenging. They might tell you the truth, but it will. They might not be as softly, gently as you might want to hear it, but then that's the way the cards go. I'm not sure what category my deck is going to fall into, so we have yet to find that one out. So an oracle deck, as far as I can see, there can be almost any theme that you can think of. I've seen illustrations of nature spirits and galaxies and cats and elementals and angels and random shapes, or what else we've got, sacred geometry, dragons, light languages. There's a deck pretty much, I reckon, for every type of preference out there. Always room for another one, though, according to Liz. And all of this means that the deck you choose really matters, as it becomes a lifelong partnership with you. Because there are so many flavours of oracle cards, I think it could be that you end up buying more than one deck. You can never have too many crystal balls, so I suppose the same rule applies. And I expect the mood you're in too at the time when you purchase them may have something to do with the deck that you draw. You know, if you're going through a difficult time and you need compassionate energy, then you might end up connecting with a deck that has that sort of energy that you're looking for. But if you're ready for that more honest feedback, that go-getter energy, that's just tell me what it is so I can deal with it straight away. If you're in that kind of mood when you go to the shop in order to buy your deck, well, you're going to get a deck where you're just not fooling around, you know. You'll probably attract a deck that will tell you straight. And from what Liz was saying, you can end up with quite a few decks. And ask her how she knows. I mean, she ended up with an entire shop full of decks in Glastonbury. So the research I've done then this week has given me tremendous respect for skilled card readers. Astonishing respect for them who've spent years developing their craft. There's real skill in this, real skill involved in interpreting the cards effectively, in asking useful questions, in creating safe space for clients in order for them to receive maybe even challenging information, and in holding that space and knowing when to push information, when to offer more gentleness around the information. Yeah, there's a lot of expertise with card reading. And I've also come to understand that divination isn't something mysterious, that's a practice that's only available to specifically gifted individuals. So there are gifts involved. I think pretty much anyone could learn to work with cards, same as they could work with pendulums, or same as could work with crystal balls. The cards themselves are simply tools, I feel, co-collaborators that help you to focus your intuition and access information that's in some ways already available in the energy fields around you. It's just that some people develop remarkable skills with these cards, with these tools. It's almost as if they can unlock, that these tools become a key to enable them to unlock onto the energy grids and download the information that's required. So here you have it, this week's discovery from my 2026 experiment. I went to Glastonbury knowing almost nothing about how divination cards work in practice, and I've come away with enough understanding not to be dangerous, but to continue creating my own oracle deck. I'm a little bit more confident about it now, though, now that I know that I'm not completely making it up as I go along or breaking any unbreakable rules, and that was a real relief. So the cards I'm channeling want to exist, and they want to speak clearly to people who need their particular style of wisdom. And whether I'm following traditional rules or creating something entirely new, it really doesn't actually matter as much as I thought it might. What matters is that the cards are authentic expressions of the consciousness that they represent. Next week on the 2026 experiment, my tales of derring do will continue, and I have absolutely no idea where I will be taken next. Thanks for listening. That's it for another show this week. I'm thrilled that you dropped by. I present Future Self Energetic Show every week for UK Health Radio, and I'd be delighted to spend more time with you next week, so do tune in. The world of energy is amazing, and it's magical, and it's mysterious, and there's always so much for us to explore about it. You have a vital connection to a web of energy fields around you. Use that connection for your benefit. I've been working with vibrational energetics all my life, and I know that when you improve your energy field, you can uplevel any part of your life.